Professor Lorimer Moseley is running three face-to-face courses in North America in 2024. He's visiting Vancouver, San Francisco, and New York City in late September and early October this year. The two-day courses are designed to help you embed the latest in pain science and education in your clinical practice. Check out the show notes to see Professor Moseley's program in each of these three iconic Canadian and US destinations. Yes, you heard correctly, the latest in pain science and education in person with Professor Lorimer Moseley, September and October 2024. Hello and welcome to JOSPT Insights, the podcast that aims to help you translate quality research to quality practice. I'm Claire Ardern, the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Orthopaedic and Sports Physical Therapy. It's great to have you listening today. Today I'm handing over the JOSPT Insights reins to some of the world's leading clinician researchers in the field of hip morphology and hip pain. At JOSPT, we're really proud to work with the YAHIR Collaborative to advance research and clinical practice for young people with hip pain. Over the coming months, you're going to hear more about what's new in the research and understanding of hip pain, including how it develops and how to best treat it, all geared towards helping you best help the patients and athletes you work with. Dr. Joshua Heary, sports physiotherapist and research fellow at La Trobe University in Melbourne, has the hosting duties today. Our guest on the podcast today is Dr. Kate Jochimsen, athletic trainer and PhD researcher. Kate is currently leading NIH-funded research to develop mind-body interventions for chronic hip pain as a member of the Faculty of Psychology at Massachusetts General Hospital, which is part of Harvard University.
So welcome to the JOSPT Insights podcast, Kate.
Hi, Josh. It's a pleasure to be here.
We know in the last decade that there's been this both growing recognition or focus on the importance of psychological health factors in patients with hip pain. So what I thought we would start with is helping us to understand what we actually mean when we're talking about psychological health factors in someone with hip pain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad that we're having this conversation because I think it's a really important one to have. Most of us, me included, were trained primarily in a biomedical model of rehabilitation, which emphasizes the biologic aspects of injury, you know, including morphology, motion, strength, movement, the things that are really in our wheelhouse. However, we now know that in addition to these, it's really critical for us to be more comprehensive, and that includes evaluating and treating our patient's psychological response to injury. When we're talking about psychological factors, especially in the context of rehabilitation, what we're referring to is our patient's beliefs and attitudes, so their thoughts and preferences, as well as their emotional responses to their injury or pain. So these can include pain anxiety or pain-related worry, hypervigilance, and fear, pain catastrophizing, which is what we think of when we see worst case scenario thinking, patients that ruminate about their pain or feelings of helplessness, self-efficacy, or a patient's confidence in their ability to cope with their pain or maybe engage in rehabilitation or physical activity, and activity avoidance. So when patients aren't participating in life events and activities that they find really valuable. These psychological factors, especially the pain anxiety and pain catastrophizing, are associated with the development of chronic pain following orthopedic injury, and that's over and beyond biomedical measures of injury severity. So this is true broadly, not only for patients with hip-related pain. So it's really critical, I think, as clinicians, for us to appreciate that pain is not just biological, it's also cognitive and emotional. And thankfully, we know that pain-related thoughts and feelings are, in fact, modifiable. And so that gives us a window of opportunity to help patients understand and then reframe their pain.
When we see our patients with hip-related pain, are there specific psychological factors that we should be identifying or thinking about when we're planning our treatment program?
I think that integrating psychological health screening into clinical practice is really important because without screening, it's really hard for us to understand if or when our patients' injury-related thoughts and feelings are impacting their pain perception and recovery. So the psychological outcome measures that are often used are the pain catastrophizing scale, the TAMPA scale for kinesophobia, and the pain self-efficacy questionnaire. Personally, those are the ones that I use. There are others, of course, in the literature. I am always cautious about using cutoff scores to make treatment decisions. However, I'm also a clinician and a researcher, and so I understand that we need a realistic way to guide clinical practice and clinical trials. And so in our group, we do use thresholds from the literature to identify patients who might benefit from psychological skills or mind-body interventions. But we try to use the most conservative option, which allows us to cast a wider net so we don't miss anyone who, you know, might really need some additional support. Some other considerations for screening. One, I think it's really important to be transparent about the rationale for including psychological screening tools with our patients. This transparency also starts to break down the stigma around mental health if we're honest with our patients about what we're screening and why, and it facilitates open communication. I like to give the psychological patient report outcome tools alongside functional and pain-related measures because it really gives us a comprehensive understanding of how our patients are presenting. Not only does that allow us to craft a rehab, you know, plan that aligns with patient beliefs and goals, but it also demonstrates to the patients that we care about their overall well-being and not just, you know, maybe their hip joint pain. And then the last thing that I'll touch on in terms of screening for psychological factors is that it's really important to do it at the baseline evaluation, and it's really important to do it over time so that you can track changes in treatment response. As always, it's important to keep an eye out for any red flags. So persistent intrusive thoughts, you know, thoughts or talks of suicide, loss of hope, or other mental health symptoms that are unrelated to the patient's presenting problem. So if their struggles with mental health are not related to their hip joint pain or injury, or, you know, I guess more broadly in musculoskeletal rehab, whatever their presenting problem is, then make sure you're referring to a mental health professional.
When someone has had their symptoms for a long period of time, so what we often term is chronic hip pain, we often believe that chronicity of symptoms is directly related to the psychological health factors that they may have. Do we know much in that space? Can you elaborate on the research in that area?
A long duration of symptoms has been linked to inferior outcomes for patients with hip-related pain, specifically hypertrophy outcomes. However, we don't see a consistent relationship with psychological factors, at least the way that we've been measuring them and in the studies that have been out. In all of our work, we haven't found a relationship between, you know, longer duration of symptoms and, let's say, higher pain catastrophizing. However, I don't think we have enough data yet to conclusively say one way or another whether or not psychological factors are related with duration of symptoms.
And so that actually probably provides a really nice segue into my next question. Is we've screened our patient for these psychological health factors and identified that some of them may be present. Do we need to consider how these may impact on the outcomes that we may achieve with our rehabilitation program? And is there evidence to support that maybe these patients are the ones that have inferior outcomes when they undergo a rehab program?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a very quickly growing body of research that is really supporting the importance of psychological factors, including the ones that we've talked about here, pain catastrophizing, kinesophobia, and pain self-efficacy, and others like anxiety and depression, in pain and functional recovery for patients with hip-related pain. In fact, there's even work that has demonstrated that psychological factors are some of the best predictors of who goes on to develop chronic pain following hip arthroscopy. There have been 3 systematic reviews on this topic, all of which explicitly recommend consideration of psychological factors in the assessment and treatment of hip-related pain. And as you know, the 2023 Clinical Practice Guidelines for Non-Arthritic Hip Joint Pain came out recently. And they do also recommend screening for psychological factors with level C evidence, which I think is a sign of progress being made. They don't necessarily provide any recommendations for the treatment of maladaptive psychological responses to hip pain, which I think highlights that even when we're identifying that there's this need, the psychological aspect of rehab is currently under-addressed.
So what can we do as rehabilitation providers and sports medicine clinicians to help our patients if they do have psychological health factors that may be their hip-related pain, but also their potential to respond to our treatment programs or rehabilitation program?
Yeah, Josh, I think that's the million-dollar question, right? In an ideal world, we would have psychological skills and mind-body interventions that are tailored to the specific needs of this unique patient population and also tailored to the rehab clinicians providing them. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist yet, but we're working on it. For now, I think there are three things that I would highlight. The first step is adopting a psychologically informed practice, which has been around for decades, and it incorporates patients' beliefs, attitudes, and emotional responses into rehab. And so it's really this clinical perspective of understanding our patient's emotional journey through their pain and injury. And so in order to do that, screening really has to be step one. Once we know who we can help, we can then teach patients psychological and mind-body skills in rehabilitation. Examples of those types of interventions might include behavioral activation techniques like goal setting and activity pacing, education and cognitive techniques like pain neuroscience education, graded exposure therapy, and simplified cognitive restructuring, and then mindfulness and relaxation techniques like diaphragmatic breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, and self-compassion or positive self-talk. It's also important for us in the clinic to really teach patients when to use these skills for maximal benefit. It's not enough to just teach the skill, but we have to teach them how to integrate it into their life and integrate it into their rehabilitation sessions. So for example, they might use self-compassion when they don't meet a rehab goal, or maybe they tap into some diaphragmatic breathing when they notice they start to get some muscle tension or pain anxiety. These skills can help patients cope with their injury and build resilience, which is beneficial in two ways. One, it allows them to fully participate in their rehab when they're there with you, whether that's strengthening or movement retraining, whatever it may be, it can facilitate stronger engagement with that. And two, it can help them actually re-engage in activities that they find meaningful in their life. The next thing I want to mention is that technology is your friend. In the first step, I mentioned interventions that you would deliver directly to your patient. However, that's not always accessible for people. But there are a variety of app-based and virtual reality psychological skills programs that you can offer to your patients, and they require no clinical training. Most of those programs include similar components, so pain education, mindfulness, distraction, which is a really effective pain relief tool. There are also a lot of benefits to tech-enhanced interventions, including they have very low levels of stigma. You can take them anywhere. They're transportable, so they can be done on the patient's phone or a portable headset in the clinic, on the road, if they're traveling or at home. They're asynchronous, so they're available to the patient at any time. And most of the modules, especially those for pain self-management, are very time efficient. On average, sessions last anywhere between like 6 to 10 minutes. So it's something that can be accessible even to people who have really, really busy lives. The last thing I would suggest is really the importance of being both conscious and cautious of the language that we use to try and shift away from pathoanatomic descriptions of pain. We recently did focus groups with physical therapists, and they told us that one of the biggest barriers to success in rehab for their patients with hip-related pain is that their patients have a pathoanatomic or biomedical view of their pain. Sometimes as clinicians, I think we can unintentionally reinforce these beliefs, and especially in the way we talk about hip-related pain. So I think instead of focusing on things that instill a disability mindset, we could instead focus on things that patients can change and actually empower our patients to increase their confidence in their bodies to recover. So for example, a hip-related pain example specifically, instead of focusing on the pathoanatomy, so saying like, you have a labral tear and that's why your hip hurts. You might say something like, together we can, you know, fill in the blank, strengthen your hip, optimize the way you're loading your joint, improve your sleep, increase your physical activity, whatever your treatment goals are. And hopefully this will help you return to the activities that you value. So not only is that approach true, we know that there's a really high prevalence of these morphologies and labral tears in asymptomatic people, but it's also empowering to patients and helps them see their bodies in a capability mindset instead of a disability mindset. And then if we're able to do this, we can actually show patients how they're improving over time, and that will help to build their confidence.
Great. Thanks, Kate. There's some really clear and easy techniques that we can obviously use in our patients. So I would like to thank you for joining me on the JOSPT Insights podcast, sharing with us your expertise and knowledge about psychological health factors in patients with hip-related pain. It's really been a privilege to listen to you today.
Thanks, Josh. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of JOSPT Insights. for more discussion of the issues in musculoskeletal rehabilitation that are relevant to your practice, subscribe to JOSPT Insights on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google, or your favorite podcast app. If you like JOSPT Insights, help others find us. Tell your friends and colleagues and rate and review us. To keep up to date with all the latest JOSPT content, be sure to follow us on Twitter, we're at JOSPT, and Facebook, we're JOSPT Official. Talk with you next time.